Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Crazy Old Man in His Own Attic, episode 76. Wilbon, we're going to start with NASCAR today. Bubba Wallace, who is the only black driver in NASCAR, told CNN, and I'm quoting now, "My next step would be to get rid of all Confederate flags. No one should feel uncomfortable when they come to a NASCAR race. Get them out of here." And Sports Business Journal is reporting that NASCAR is considering this. So what do you think? Should NASCAR do this?
Tony, let me just start with my bias. You know me well enough, but let me just remind people. You know, I'm a son of two Southerners who fled the South, fled during the Great Migration after the Depression. And I feel a certain way about the Confederate flag, and probably even more strongly than Bubba Wallace. And I understand exactly. I see the Southern flag, and it raises the hair on my arm. I find it loathsome. Tony, I don't know that this is going to fly. I mean, a significant portion of NASCAR's fan base believes, first of all, is Southern, if not directly from in terms of heritage, and believes in the Confederate flag. And so when you talk about business, it's going to take a strong stand. And it's going to take a stand where the president of NASCAR says, this is what we're doing. He's going to have to get support from the other drivers, not just Bubba Wallace. And Jimmy Johnson is out there saying, he's out in front saying, hey, I'm educating myself about all of this. I am calling friends of color and listening to the experiences of their life. And he's already talked to Bubba Wallace, and I'm sure he'll talk to him again. I admire the courage that it takes to say, get this out of here. Do I know that the NASCAR is going to do that and make it fly? No, I don't.
Yeah, so I was looking at one of those video presentations that the NASCAR drivers did, which is sort of similar to one that the NFL players did. A lot of big names in NASCAR were involved, including recently retired Dale Earnhardt Jr., whose word means something to
me. It means something,
and I think in the sport. Yeah. And they said they were committed to listening. They said, and I'm quoting now, to no longer be silent, to make real change. This would be real change. This would be walking the walk. Because, as you say, there are Southern roots in NASCAR. And a lot of these people, they look at the Confederacy as a sort of romance of rebellion, as breaking away from authority. They may have no understanding whatsoever that to black people, there's no romance in it. That
none.
The states that seceded from the Union and fought for the Confederacy did so to retain slavery. So there's got to be a business calculation here, and we're both at the same spot. Because you have to say, how many white fans will walk away? How many black fans will walk in? But I will tell you this, Mike, and I think I find myself saying this all the time. This is that real moment. These are those real conversations. You can't sell the Confederate flag anymore. You can't do it. So I think NASCAR not just should, I think they will.
Tony, once again, it's about the fifth straight day I find myself saying, partner, I hope you're right. But you know, Tony, 110 miles south from where you sit in your attic is a place called Richmond. And they host a big race.
Yep.
And if you tell me you can go to Richmond and that race
capital
and not see a Confederate flag in the future, and in Richmond they just took down a famous Confederate statue, or at least decided to take it down, the governor. So we know that change appears to be a coming. But that would be substantive change, Tony. I think you're 100% right.
Yes, it would. Yes, it would.
Yeah. Let's move, Tony, to this Iowa story. Over the weekend, Iowa strength coach Chris Doyle was put on administrative leave after allegations of biased behavior toward black Iowa football players. Since that action, more and more current and former Hawkeyes have spoken out about the culture for black players at Iowa. Last night, sophomore defensive back Kavion Merriweather posted a statement on Twitter that said if Iowa fans would not support players who kneel for the national anthem, quote, "Do not support us during the season. Do not watch us on TV. Do not ask for photos and autographs. I would rather play for 1,000 fans who care about us as people than 70,000 who only care about us when we are on the field entertaining them, close quote. Tony, we continue in this vein. Your thoughts on what's unfolding at Iowa?
It's very problematic for Iowa football. It's very problematic for the longest tenured D1 coach out there, Kirk Ferentz. I hope I pronounce his name correctly.
You did.
He wants to recruit black players into a state that is 91% white demographically. He's got his current and former black players saying they were held to a different standard than white players. He's got this strength coach out there who the black players have turned their ire on. This is Ferentz's Drew Brees moment. He's got to find a way to get that team together and convince them that this is a redo for all of them, that he's with them. I don't know him. I don't know if he can do it.
Well, Tony, his credibility is what's at stake here for that program. And the university bosses, the president of Iowa, is going to have to really sort of be plugged into this because, Tony, look, growing up in Chicago, there were always Iowa recruiters, basketball and football, where I lived, getting kids from Chicago, the south side of Chicago included. And so, Tony, you know, when I grew up, I didn't know much about historically black colleges because the Big Ten schools, including the University of Iowa, had black students. You can go decades back. You can go decades back with many of the Big Ten schools. And so, yes, the coaching staff at Iowa now, their credibility is on the line. When they say, look, we're going to make it so that you still want to come to Iowa, they're going to have to be believed. So they're going to have to prove this. They're going to have to sell their own current players, Tony, and their alums. Because if they're alums, and there's some famous guys in there, guys who played in the NFL, if they don't want to sell alma mater, what's going to happen at the University of Iowa? You're going to see them sink like a rock in the Big Ten if they can't do that.
So let's just take a look at what I think is going on here. This is the Me Too movement coming to athletics. There's an inventory out there that you're going to have to go through. You're going to have to go through all of these claims as people look back on their careers and they say, this happened to me. All of that is going to have to be dealt with. This is, you always talk about the real hard conversations. These are the yes. real hard conversations. And yeah. to use our first story with NASCAR, some of these coaches, some of these staff members, they're going to end up like Confederate statues. They're going to be toppled down. This, you know, change is not easy. It's not just, oh, we'll do this, everything will be fine. These hard conversations, you and I have to have them. Yeah. Everybody's got to have them.
Everybody's
credibility.
And yeah, Tony, it's going to start during those recruiting trips now. Don't you think recruiting visits to people's homes are going to be a little bit different now?
A lot different. It's going to be show me, prove it, sign it, give me an out if it doesn't work, all of those things. Let's move on to a topic I know that you're interested in because it's your boy, Daryl Morey, who has yep. emerged from his cocoon and he has told something called the Pomp Podcast that he takes the blame for not surrounding James Harden with a good enough cast. Morey said, I'm quoting, most days I wake up saying I've let him down because I haven't gotten him the right players to win a title, unquote. Wilbon, you standing with your boy on this one?
No, I think it's a great bit of GMing. I think when you go out there and you say to James Harden, you don't have to say anything to James Harden. He knows this story's out there. Put it on me. I like people at every level who can say, I will take accountability. And sell that and mean it. I know Daryl means it. Daryl's not saying this to sort of, you know, suck up to James Harden. He believes this because he says he thinks about it at night. And I know he does because I've talked to him about it. And no, I'm not pinning this on Daryl Morey. James Harden's had some big moments in his career. And most of them he has not cashed in on because they've come in things like, oh, game 5, game 6, game 7. I mean, we've seen it, Tony. So, no, I mean, when Chris Paul was on that team, and they nearly had it. I believe if Chris Paul is healthy and he doesn't have to go out with the injury, game 6 or game 7, one of those games, I think Houston's going to win and get to the NBA Finals. I know you don't really believe that. But James Harden wasn't the most important player on that team, even though he was perhaps the best player on that team. But Daryl Morey put the right team around James Harden at least twice, and James Harden had every chance to get his team through. If you're going to be one of the GOATs, you got to win those games, and he didn't do it.
So let me say, first of all, that if Daryl Morey wakes up every morning thinking about James Harden, he needs a new mattress. You cannot wake up every morning thinking about James Harden. And let's go over what you're talking about. Because James Harden is a great player on a Wednesday night.
Great. He is
December and January and February.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
great. But in the playoffs, in clinching games, 2015, Golden State, 2 of 11 shooting, 12 turnovers. 2017, San Antonio, 2 of 11 shooting, 6 turnovers. 2018, Golden State, 2 of 13 from 3. 2019, Golden State, 4 turnovers in the fourth quarter. Houston lost them all. Daryl Morey tries everything. Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook, go small, go big. Daryl Morey tries everything. Not everybody wins, Mike. Not everybody wins. There's some great players out there who have never won. And a lot of people came up against Michael Jordan, and they couldn't beat Michael. You know, like, you know, James Harden couldn't win with Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook in Oklahoma City. It sometimes happens. But the fault is as much James Harden's as it is everybody else's, and not everybody wins all the time. They don't.
No, I mean, just a little history lesson, boys and girls. Jerry West is the logo, and we love him. But Jerry West and the Los Angeles Lakers choked time after time.
They won once.
They got one. And who's the first person who reminds us when we say how great he is? Jerry. Jerry says, oh, wait. We didn't do it.
One.
So I don't know if James Harden has to have a moment where he deals with himself and how he's playing. Tony, those numbers you cited, those are indictments. They are in terms of great playoff basketball. And by the way, it's not automatic. It's hard to have great games in those moments, and he hasn't had it.
It is. It is.
Golf, Tony. Golf, I know how excited you are. About to get a restart Thursday at the Colonial in Dallas.
Good.
CBS announced yesterday that some, but not all, golfers will be mic'd this week. And none of them will be wearing earpieces, which allowed for the announcer to player conversations that we saw and enjoyed so much in the match with Tiger and Phil and Manning and Brady. I know how crazed you are about having people mic'd up. What do you think about this?
Okay, so first of all, I don't care if everybody talks, but if some people are mic'd up, if you carry one little piece of equipment that's physical, I believe everybody's got to carry it. You don't have to talk to everybody, but everybody, the playing field has to be level in that regard as far as I'm concerned. I find it amusing that Nick Faldo, who's really good, been a great guest on this show when we used to have guests, he said golfers are entertainers and they have to do something different now. Yeah, they do. But Nick Faldo also admits if he was a golfer, he'd say, no, I don't want to do this. Yeah, I don't want to have to talk to anybody out there. To your point, just being mic'd up to me is half a loaf. It's weak. I want the crosstalk. I want the dialogue. I want what Barkley did. You know, I want you to have to answer something. Just being mic'd up, so what? So what?
I know you want Charles in the tower now or on the course. You're provoking people to talk. I know that's what you want.
So we talk, I want him on 18 like a giant blimp. That's what I want with Charles. Big blimp on 18.
Tony, you know there's only about 5 golfers you want to hear. I understand what you're saying is they all have to be mic'd. In the formality, the thing doesn't weigh that much. It's a microphone. That's it. The technology today allows for some wireless piece to be carried around that a golfer doesn't notice. But, Tony, I don't want to hear from all of them. I don't want them all mic'd. Because 90% of people being mic'd is a waste of time. Whether it's the NFL or the NBA, you just don't get people like Lawrence Taylor helping up whatever Redskin lineman he ran past on a Sunday to say, son, y'all got to do better than this. You don't get that often enough, right? So if you could have Lawrence, if you can tell me everybody's going to be LT, then I'd put them out there. But they're not going to be that.
No, you're right about that. And you don't have to talk to all of them. I just think that what made the baseball game so charming was the players were mic'd up. You had a couple of guys on the Cubs, Bryant and Rizzo, right? I think they were mic'd up.
Yeah, those guys
and
are coming. Those guys are personalities.
On.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you don't think Rory is a personality or Justin Thomas is a personality?
Yes.
Yeah, they're all personalities. And by the way, just as a side note, the field is great for the Colonial. The top 5 and 8 of the top 10 and no Tiger. Yeah. I wish Tiger would have said, yeah, I'll go play.
Tiger shouldn't just walk into the room with the rest of the boys. Tiger can come 10 minutes late. You want the room to be filled, and then you look and you see Tiger. Come on now. I don't need Tiger to show up for this.
Okay, then
he'll get there.
Then let him come to the second round. Just show up day two. Here I am. Let's go.
How great would that be? Tiger with a microphone for the second round or for the weekend. That would be so cool.
Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically. All on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
GEICO has the insurance industry-leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere. Which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
Time for the happies in my own attic. Happy 69th birthday, Dave Parker. History lesson, kids. The best arm in the outfield always belongs to the right fielder. And for many years, the best arm in the National League belonged to Dave Parker in Pittsburgh. He won three straight gold gloves. From 1975 to 1979, he threw out 72 runners. And he was feared at the plate, a career 290 hitter in 19 seasons, with 2,712 hits and 339 homers. In Pittsburgh, where he was part of the 1979 We Are Family World Champions, he was the NL MVP in 1978. Ultimately, he was a seven-time All-Star, and he picked up another World Series ring late with the A's. Parker's $5 million deal over 5 years with the Pirates made him the first professional athlete to average $1 million a year. But there was controversy as well. He admitted using cocaine regularly and testified at the infamous Pittsburgh drug trial. That stain is said by many to be a contributing factor to why Parker is not in Cooperstown.
Cobra, Tony. Dave Parker was such a big man, and he moved like a cat. I loved to watch Dave Parker play growing up, even when he was in those hideous uniforms, by the way, those hideous pirate uniforms at the time, those yellow things that make you look like a yellow cab in any city in America. But I was just a Dave Parker fan. Just think of how great you have to be to essentially sort of kind of replace, although you can't replace, Roberto Clemente. I mean, you have to move into, I mean, come on now. I mean, Roberto Clemente, you don't want to follow that. And Dave Parker, man, I think he belongs in the Hall of Fame. I really do.
All right, personal note, happy birthday, Carol. We move to happy anniversary, Bobby Valentine. On this day 21 years ago, while managing the Mets, Valentine got tossed, only to return to the dugout an inning later with a fake mustache, sunglasses, and a T-shirt, as you see in this classic video. He looks like a porn star skulking around. Valentine was fined $5,000, suspended 2 games for this stunt. Valentine played 10 seasons in the bigs, where he learned enough that the Texas Rangers named him their manager when he was just 35 years old, and maybe that's why he always thought he was the smartest guy in the ballpark. He managed the Rangers, the Chiba Latte Marines in Japan, the Mets, the Marines again, where he won the Japanese World Series, and his players threw him into the air like a rag doll, in the Red Sox. He ranks 47th all-time in manager wins, but he has just a .504 winning percentage. Valentine, by the way, is now the athletic director at Sacred Heart University in his native Connecticut.
Tony, doesn't it seem to you like Valentine was just one of those people who loved baseball so much he would go to any corner of the earth to have a team if somebody said, you can have a team and you can be in this league? And I don't know. The few times I had as a sports writer to be around and listen to Bobby Valentine, I loved it. I don't know about how you felt about that.
I liked him very much. I liked him on television. You know, he's great to talk to. He's great to talk to. Happy trails to training camp for Dalvin Cook. The Viking star running back wants a new deal. He's threatening not to show up at camp if he doesn't get one. This happens every year with somebody. One year it's Melvin Gordon. One year it's Ezekiel Elliott. One year it's Le'Veon Bell. This year it's Dalvin Cook, who was the centerpiece of the Vikings offense last year. with 1,135 rushing yards and 13 touchdowns. He looks over at Kirk Cousins, making $150 million over 5 years, and he says, give me some of that. Cook is due to make $1.3 million this year and is reportedly looking for something in the $13 to $15 million range. But as a player with less than 4 years in the league, Cook stands to lose a year towards his unrestricted free agency and would be a restricted free agent in 2021. Plus, there's the possibility of being fined $50,000 a day for his holdout, which could accumulate to more than his salary. So where is the leverage here?
Tony, I guess the leverage in that, you want to put this all on Kirk Cousins, you like that? You want to put the whole thing on him? Because, I mean, to me, that seems like a bit much. And Cook, 13 touchdowns. Only Adrian Peterson for that franchise has more in a season rushing. The great Chuck Foreman, I think he had 12 a couple of times. Maybe he was tied with him once with 13. But come on now, the Vikings, I mean, how serious are they about winning? It would seem to me if you're offering 10 and you know the guy really wants 13, you can get to something that's doable. It would seem like that to me.